Welcome to the Influential Women podcast series, the podcasts that talk about women that really inspire and motivate us, the ones that we just want to be like. We want them to reveal their business acumen and for them to share their views and visions with us so that just maybe some of their magic could even work on us. My influential woman today is Carla Bizzarchi. Hello, Carla. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me on.
So Carla Bizzarchi is the founding editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post UK, an award-winning editor and journalist with Marie Claire, Glamour.com, and Vogue Online Publishing. And now, with this amazing title, she is Global Chief Content Officer at trend forecasting company WGSN. Wow, Carla, that is impressive.
Thank you very much. I'm actually blushing. You're saying it in such an enthusiastic, lovely way. So you're making me feel very good about myself right now. Thank you.
You are an inspiration and an influence for women everywhere, and particularly for younger women such as yourself. How do you feel about that?
Well, it's incredibly flattering. I feel I've been very lucky in my career. I've learned from some amazing women. I think it's a really good time for women right now. That's a bit of a blanket statement, and clearly that's not the case everywhere in the world. But I think right now things are quite good, but we can't rest on our laurels. I was a member of the Women's March a few weeks back. I think it's important that women continue to speak up for themselves, and anything I can do to help make that happen, I think is a responsibility I take on myself.
Now, you've achieved so much, and if you don't mind me saying, so young. You even won one of the 35 under 35 awards from management today, is that right?
That is right. It was quite an interesting one because my entire career has been as a writer and journalist, and then moving into this role at WGSN, I'm still running a content team, so it's still about content. I actually hate the word content, but it's still about words and pictures and video and things like that. But I think part of my success has been having a good business head. I see myself as a creative. I've always been on the creative side of businesses, but increasingly to get in head, you have to have a commercial understanding as well. So it was really nice that Business Today sort of put me in that category rather than just, well, she knows how to spin a good headline or write a good story.
No, and I love the word content. So can you please share more about your once in a lifetime role of launching Huffington Post UK and how that came about?
Okay, so I had been working at Marie Claire on the digital side and on the magazine side, which had been an amazing role, and I'd worked for a number of amazing editors there as well. And AOL approached me about a new position, editor-in-chief, and there's a long story behind that, but I went and I launched a women's site, and I was merrily working away in a dark room thinking about launching a men's site. And this is what I knew, kind of magazine style digital platforms. That was my area of expertise. And I was standing on the train platform one morning and there was an email from Tim Armstrong, who's the CEO of AOL, to the entire company. And it said that he wanted everyone to know before it leaked to the markets that AOL were buying the Huffington Post. I was a huge fan of the Huffington Post, obsessively would log on every day. I'm not ashamed to admit that just before every editorial meeting at Marie Claire, I'd log on to the Huffington Post and see what great ideas were out there. So I got on the train and I Googled Arianna Huffington's email address, which actually is quite widely available. And I sent her an email on the train saying, I'm Carla, I'm the editor-in-chief in the UK. I love the Huffington Post and I would love to launch it here. And she replied almost immediately, saying, let's have a phone conversation, which we did. And the deal wasn't done by that point, so we weren't probably supposed to be talking, but we had a phone conversation, and she came over a few weeks later. We had breakfast together, and I turned up at this breakfast with my iPad then, so it's a few years ago, and had someone mock up what I thought the front page of the Huffington Post UK might look like, which was essentially the Huffington Post US, but with a Union Jack and David Cameron's face on it. Again, this is dating the conversation slightly. In what I came to know as a very Arianna Huffington kind of way, said, well, let's do it. And she was a speaker that morning at the Guardian's news conference. So every morning, Alan Rusbridger, who was the editor there, would have his normal news conference, and he would often invite a speaker along. And she was the speaker that day, and she announced midway through their news conference, which I'm sure Alan wasn't overly happy about it, that we were launching the Huffington Post in the UK this summer. And I was sitting cross-legged at the back of the room with all these students who'd come in, and that Carla Bevan, as I was known then, was going to be the editor-in-chief. And that's how I got my job as the launch editor of the Huffington Post in this country.
But that's such a lovely story. And serendipity, that was definitely right place, right time.
Yeah, I think so. And I didn't... So I've told that story quite a few times, and people have used it as an example of kind of women going after and getting what they want. But it didn't... There was no thought process. It was just... I like this brand, and this woman is inspirational. And, you know, I was really lucky. She picked up my email address and she let me go and do that. She didn't know me, but she saw something in me. And then it was my job to prove that she'd made the right decision.
And you were first and you reached out.
I did reach out. So, and then that took up pretty much every minute of my breathing life for the 3.5 years after that. But it was an amazing experience. I'm really proud of what we achieved there.
Well, and I'm proud of you. What an accolade. But it obviously took a lot of hard work as well to achieve your success. Now, were your family or friends an influence at all in getting into your industry?
My family are my biggest influence. I am exceptionally lucky. I have a really close family. My parents were both teachers. They're newly retired and currently enjoying their retirement. But they always told us we should do what we wanted to do. So it shouldn't be about earning the biggest salary. It shouldn't be about living in the biggest house. It should be about doing something we were passionate. And that was instilled in us at a very, very early age. And I knew I wanted to be a writer. There was a very short period when I thought I wanted to be a vet. That was short-lived. And I loved writing. I loved reading. So being a journalist seemed the obvious career choice. And when I was at university, while everyone else would get care packages of food or money, I would get envelopes that would arrive full of clippings from newspapers and magazines of articles that my parents thought I would find interesting. And they still to this day send me their links now rather than things, or my dad will forward me tweets and things like that. They just really encouraged it. And they're still my biggest supporters and also my biggest critics. So my mum will invariably log onto the website I'm editing at the time and point out that there's a typo in a headline or something like that. But yeah, huge inspirational. I'm really close to my brother and sister, and we've all done very, very different things. But yes, any success I have is definitely down to the amazing upbringing I had.
How lovely. They'll be pleased to hear that. Now, what has made you the proudest of your career, the big game changer? I mean, it must have been Huffington Post, but anything else?
I'm really, really proud of that. It's nice to win awards, and I actually think awards are good because it raises the entire profile of the brand, so it's not necessarily about the individual recipient. It's nice to have on your CV, and it looks good on your LinkedIn profile. But this is going to sound kind of cheesy, but it's genuinely true. I will sometimes get emails from members of my team saying sort of thank you, or they feel that they've been mentored well, or they've been inspired. And that genuinely is what means the most to me. It sounds incredibly cheesy, but it's coming from a very genuine place. And yeah, that makes me feel really proud. I love building brands. That makes me super excited. And I remember when we first launched Huffington Post, and get in a cab, and it's London, so the cab journey, what do you do for a living? Or I'm an editor for the Huffington Post. And, you know, in the early days, they didn't know what you were talking about, never heard of Huffington Post. And as it grew, you know, a few years in, I can remember getting in a cab once and the driver was like, oh yeah, the Huffington Post. I'm always hearing them on the radio. And yeah, I saw something on TV about them. And I was just like, wow, we've built this brand. And that was, yeah, that made me really happy and really proud.
How wonderful. And sharing and helping your teams as well. That's amazing. You won Editor of the Year at the Online Media Awards and Media Innovator of the Year at the British Media Awards. So can I touch on some more of your passions, Carla? You've shared your wonderful upbringing there. Has fashion and news always been a lifelong passion?
I think maybe it's just a nosy disposition, which I think it stands journalists in good stead. You want to know more about the world. I've never been a kind of pure disciple in one area. And it's really interesting. My team at WGSN are really deep experts in specific areas. So we've got a team just dedicated to denim, for instance, and they live and breathe denim. We've got exactly the same when it comes to intimates and swimwear. So this team knows everything there is about lingerie trends and things like that. Whereas I've always been more of a generalist. So I'm kind of the equivalent of the Sunday supplement. So I'm passionate about travel and I love lifestyle projects and I'm thrilled to be close to the fashion industry, but I also want to know what's going on in the news today. And I actually think that's what makes a really good editor in contrast to perhaps a really good journalist. So I like to think I'm a good journalist, but I think I'm probably a better editor because I've got that broader understanding and that broader interest base. When I very first started out, I didn't see fashion as a way to go. I wanted to be on a women's features desk at a magazine. That was the ultimate ambition. But one of my very first roles, and this will tell you that it is not glamorous all the way, I was working at the Swarovski magazine, so the people who make crystal. Sadly, I didn't walk out of university and go into running the Guardian. And basically that job meant that I was cleaning crystal in a cupboard for 6 months with no room, with no windows and no light. But because I was a junior member on the team, they gave me the opportunity to do interviews, and Swarovski at the time were sponsoring lots of fashion designers. So I suddenly found myself interviewing Zac Posen, who was the cool fashion designer of the moment. And I became really interested, not just in, what garments they're wearing and making people look good, but the business side of that as well. And I think the fashion industry gets poo-pooed a lot, that it's a frivolous. And it's not. It brings in millions and millions of pounds to the economy in this country. And my interest is in that. How does it support economies and the creativity behind it as well? So I get turned on by that side of fashion rather than, I'm not someone who spends hours and hours deciding what to wear every morning. But then I'm really, passionate about news. And I think what's going on in the political landscape at the moment is exceptionally interesting. I have to say, I have thanked my lucky stars quite a few times over the last year that I'm not running the Huffington Post at the moment, because I clearly wouldn't have had a second of sleep with everything that's going on. And it's really lovely to go and read other people's opinions on that and not having to think, well, what's our editorial standpoint on it? But yes, I'm interested in a great many things is the short answer to that question.
Well, you've got the breadth of experience there and the depth. Fantastic. Is there any time for any hobbies?
Yes, there is lots of times for hobbies. I was going to say exercise. It's not so much exercise as just being active. So I play tennis with a friend every couple of weeks. With said same friend, we do frame fitness classes. So yes, I like moving a lot. So there's quite a lot of that that comes into it. But I like eating and drinking as well, which is why it's very important to do the active side of things. I am a lifelong can't cook, won't cook. But one of my New Year's resolutions was this year, my boyfriend and I were going to create 52 meals from an actual recipe rather than spending huge amounts of money on delivery, which is what we had been doing. And so far that's going quite well. I've been doing lots of deliciously Ella recipes and I'm very much enjoying that as well. So finally, in my late 30s, I have finally started doing what you could possibly term cooking, although given it's all vegetarian cooking, not a huge amount of skill goes into it. So that's the newest hobby.
Fantastic. And I love that brand. We need to do something with that. So you've talked about your parents being the greatest influence in your life that you look up to. Are there any other values they've instilled in your life?
That's a really good question. I think being true to yourself and knowing what's important in life, and I especially think in the London media bubble, you can get sort of tricked into this falsehood that this is what the whole world is like. And they live in Stroud in Gloucestershire, and you go home and, there's cats everywhere and you're in Wellington boots for the weekend, and that sort of grounds you. And I think it's really important to have that. And, at the end of the day, my boyfriend and I have a kind of catchphrase, which is happy, healthy family. And that's what we strive to put, that's the most important thing to us. It's not about work. And work is a huge part of what I do. And I can't imagine not working. And I'm super passionate about that. But at the end of the day, happiness is the most important thing. And your family and your health are part of what makes that happen.
That's fabulous. That's what we need to be doing to influence other women. Thank you for that. So how would you encourage young women to follow in your footsteps?
Look, it's going to sound like an absolute cliche, which is, be passionate about something that you do. But I believe it's a cliche for a reason, and it gets repeated for a reason, which is if you're doing something that you're really passionate about, it's a lot easier to be good at it. And you know, if you're passionate about money, then go and do a job that is going to earn you loads of money, and I'm sure you'll be good at that as well. But I chose to do things I was passionate about. I think you have to work exceptionally hard, and I am concerned, and I've talked about this in the past, that message has got lost somewhat, and there's a generation that thinks that if they kind of turn up and do the job that they'll be rewarded for that. I don't think that's the case. You have to go above and beyond, and you have to go above and beyond on a regular basis, and that's how you will get ahead. And I think it's such an important message, and there's this sort of, I guess it's the X factor aspect that people think they will be successful overnight, and it doesn't happen that often. You have to put the hours in, you have to put the hard graft in, you've got to continually be working and thinking about how you can improve yourself. And I think we all need to take responsibility for that. So my reading is a way of being better at being an editor, and if I want to understand trends better, not only do I have to ask my team every single day, but I have to be looking at broader instances of that. And I'm in a management position now, which means that my company has to be successful, so I'm looking at how other companies are successful and continuing to educate myself that way. So yeah, be passionate but work hard as well.
Brilliant. So never stop learning. I mean, you obviously have a large amount of staff here. How many staff have you got?
So just in my team alone, there are 100, and that's full-time members of staff. There are about 250 who encompass the content and consulting teams at WGSN. And as a company, I think we're between 350, 400 people. So yeah, it's a sizable company.
It certainly is. So leadership skills, what other skills do you need to have?
As I mentioned earlier, I think you have to have a commercial head. So you need to understand the numbers. That's really important. No business survives today on a kind of a hope and a whim. You know, how are you making money? Because that guarantees the future of your business. I think future thinking and future proofing. So how will your company evolve? How are other companies evolving? I think that's a really important skill to hone, and it doesn't come necessarily naturally. So are you looking outside of your field of expertise? I think compassion as well, understanding people. I can't think of a single job in the world where people skills don't come into it in some shape or form. Maybe vets, maybe that's just animal skills that you have to have, but they've got owners. So I think that's really important. And yeah, a thirst for knowledge always.
That's fabulous advice. So what would you say to others who want to follow that?
What would be my overarching message? I think continue learning, work hard, and be true to the things that you hold dear. I said earlier, it's never been a better time for women. It's a difficult time for women as well, just because of everything that's going on in the political landscape at the moment. But I think women have to take a responsibility themselves. In fact, all people have to take a responsibility for themselves if they want to get ahead. So it would always be, you know, push for the next thing, educate yourself in that. And if that, your wish through that might not be that you want to be promoted at work. It might be that you want to have a family. And if that's what you want, then you should go after that as well. So I think every woman needs to make the choices that are right for her at the right time. So I guess my advice is don't listen to the rubbish that I'm coming out with, but you know, think about what's right for you. And educate yourself in that area as well. Listen to podcasts. That's very important. Listen to podcasts. That's key at the moment. And I'm joking about that, but as a way to educate yourself at the moment, it's never been easier. I mean, YouTube is full of things. You can teach yourself pretty much anything at the moment. So again, we have never had so much information available to us. So arm yourself with that and then apply it in the right way for you.
Gosh, Carla, and you heard it here first. Listen to podcasts. The world must surely be your oyster with your combination of digital know-how and editorial vision and knowing about content. What's happening next with content and communication?
Do you know what? I think that the podcast thing is so interesting because it's essentially, you know, radio on demand. And surely radio should have been killed off by first TV and then websites that came along and then YouTube and video formats. And it hasn't. And I think that's amazing. Long form spoken word is more fashionable than it's ever been before. So I think in terms of content areas, yeah, we're investing in, everyone's investing in podcasts at the moment. Video is only going to rise, that on-demand nature of wanting things. But really the future of content, as a sort of neat summary, is giving people the information or the entertainment they need when they want it and in the format that they want it. The consumer is spoilt for choice and has never been more demanding than he or she is now. And therefore, content creators, in whatever sphere they may be, have to respond to that if they want to safeguard their futures. And I sit in a very privileged position as a middle-class woman in London. But that information for women who are less fortunate, who are living in countries where that information has been kept from them, I think the digital world is improving that and will only continue to do that. And I hope those technology leaders who are working so hard to ensure that Wi-Fi is available across the globe are thinking also not just about how they're going to get their digital platforms in front of people, but the information on those digital platforms. And that's a huge responsibility when you've got tech and digital brands who have revenues that are greater than countries. How are they going to use that as a force for good? And I think that will be interesting and is a responsibility for any of us who work in this industry in the coming years.
Fantastic. Now I realise how articulate and successful you've become is because of all this incredible vision. Thank you so much, Carla.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Carla Bisacci, for your time and for sharing your career, your vision and your voice with us today as an influential woman for women today. Thank you. This Influential Women podcast is produced by Nikki Bannerman and Juliet Nichols, a collaboration after meeting through the SAM Women Networking Group.